But with my bundle of Braille notes, I was secure. It took twice as long for me to read them as it would have had I been able to read longhand. But the subject matter was right there at my fingertips.
Say, Karsten, how do you keep track of your notes? I should think the dots would all get rubbed off the paper.
Oh, they stay all right unless I step on them or smash them down.
Did you ever do that?
Well, not exactly. The other day, though, I forgot that I'd left my notebook lying open on the chair and I sat on it.
You did? Did it spoil your notes?
No, but I had to read my English assignment off the seat of my pants. Many persons have the impression that blind people are deaf. Most persons to whom I speak look directly at me as if they would at anyone else. I can tell by the sound of their voices. Occasionally, however, I meet someone who gives all his conversation to the person at my side as if I were not there at all. It makes me uncomfortable. Dick and I went into the library one day.
What book does he want?
What book did you say you wanted?
Les Miserables by Victor Hugo.
He wants Les Miserables by Victor Hugo.
All right. Here it is, over here. Does he want to take it with him?
Do you want to take it with you?
Yes, I want to take it with me.
Yes, he wants to take it with him.
Does he want it signed in his own name?
Do you
no,
want
he doesn't.
It signed?
He's changed his mind. He doesn't want a book.
Now, whatever do you suppose got into him?
Book learning, I decided, wasn't the only thing to get out of college. Social life was important. Women and books didn't have to conflict. It was just as bad to neglect one as the other. I made a mental list of my female acquaintances. Personality perhaps meant more to me than it would have had I been able to see. I wasn't overcome by a classy-looking blonde or pretty brunette, as were many of the other fellows. But at the same time, I didn't want a wallflower. I didn't want a girl who would go with me only because she couldn't go with anyone else. Oh, Dick?
Yeah?
Say, how's that Louise for looks?
Oh, not bad at all. Brown hair, blue eyes, nice smile. Why?
Oh, I don't know. Just wondering. Hello? 474, please. Yeah, that's right. Hello, is this the girl's dormitory? Well, could I speak to, I'd like to speak to Louise Johnson. What'll I say? What'll I do if she says no? What'll I do if she says yes? What'll I
hello?
Do if she... Oh, hello, hello, Louise, this is Karsten Onstadt. Remember me? The guy who spilled the punch all over his lap at the class party a couple of weeks ago.
Sure, I remember. How are you, Karsten?
Fine, thanks. Say, well, there's a good show on down at the theater. Would you like to see it?
Why, yes, I would.
She had accepted. To my confusion, to my consternation, to my profound and abject horror, she had accepted. It seemed to me that every man on the campus had gathered on the steps of the girls' dormitory to watch me enter. I could picture them standing on the porch railings, hanging from the windows, perched on top of the flagpole, all staring. I stepped carefully to keep from stumbling on the steps. Fumbled for the latch, found it, and entered. I fell out of place standing there in the hall waiting for Louise.
All ready to go?
Oh, hello, Louise. Yes, let's go. She took my arm. We walked out the door past the two or three persons standing on the porch. I glowed with pride. She was a girl that any of the fellows would be glad to take out, and she was not afraid to be seen with me. Yes, I was proud. There was a carnival in town. Louise and I walked down together.
I really shouldn't have worn this new dress tonight. I'll probably spill ice cream on it or something.
Oh, do you have on a new dress? What's it like?
Well, it's blue, and it has a very full skirt.
Oh, that sounds very nice.
Thank you.
We elbowed our way through the crowd, listened to the merry-go-round, chewed popcorn until our lips burned from the salt, made ourselves generally happy. How about going up in the Ferris wheel, Louise?
Okay.
A great hurricane of wind rushed upward, caught the legs of my trousers and whipped them up to my knees. Someone threw a sheet over our heads.
Ah!
Who threw that sheet over our heads?
Let go. That isn't a sheet. That's my skirt.
It was after midnight. Louise didn't seem to be worried about getting in. We stood in the porch and listened to the rain.
It's a wet night, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of wet. Rain's just about to stop, though.
Well, it's getting pretty late. I guess I ought to go in. I had a wonderful evening.
Her face, I knew from her voice, was looking upward into my own. I took her chin in my hand to make certain of my aim and bent forward.
Good night.
The 4 years rushed by too fast, leaving their sediment of wisdom and philosophy. After my graduation, I applied for positions as teacher at several schools, but was not accepted. Apparently, my education had been for nothing. After 4 years of college, I still couldn't earn my own living. Then came an offer from the School for the Blind, assistant librarian, beginning salary of $50 a month, plus room and board. I was delighted. At last, I had achieved the financial independence I had despaired of finding. My library position held no prospect for advancement of any kind. After 3 years, the mailman continued to bring my monthly check for $50. I could have lived comfortably at the school for the rest of my life, but I wanted something more than mere security. My brother stopped by to see me on his way to a new teaching position. I explained the situation to him.
Have you tried to get another job?
Yes, but there's no one interested after they find out that I'm blind. If I could only go back to school for another year. If I had another degree, maybe that would help.
Well, why don't you go back to school then?
Where would I get the money?
Well, is there any sort of a scholarship you could apply for?
I can apply for one from the American Foundation for the Blind, but that doesn't mean I'll get it.
Well, go ahead and apply. You can't leave anything behind. You know what you ought to do? You ought to go down to the University of Iowa.
Why the University of Iowa?
Well, you've always been interested in writing, and they have one of the best departments in creative writing in the country down there. You could write a novel or a group of short stories for your thesis. Well, what are you looking so glum about?
I got an answer to my application for scholarship.
Tonight?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you go down there to school anyway? Something may turn up after you get down there.
I had a little money saved, enough to carry me through the first semester. I was granted a year's leave of absence from my job with the library. My brother drove me down to Iowa City and stayed long enough to walk around the campus with me. I'd secured a room in the quadrangle, a men's dormitory. We walked down a hill, across a bridge, and up another hill to University Hall, where the English department was located.
Well, it's time for me to be going. Good luck. And remember, when you run out of money, let me know.
The university was much larger and more confusing than the college I'd attended, but I adapted to it quickly. For academic studies, however, was gone. After working for 3 years, I found ancient philosophy and 17th century verse impractical. Worst of all, my creative imagination had atrophied. I could not write. I was unable to do the thing for which I had come to the university. I talked with Dr. Schramm, head of the writer's workshop.
I'd like to see how you write. Bring me several pages of your work, anything you care to write about.
You wanted to see me, Dr. Schramm?
Oh, yes, Ohnstadt. Sit down. Chair over there to your right. I want to talk to you about the article you gave me. Are there any particular subjects about which you want to write?
No, I don't think so.
To be frank with you, I find nothing in your work that's distinctive. Oh, it's fair writing, but Well, there are hundreds of people who can do as well. You'll have to do quite a bit better if you expect to have your thesis accepted.
But it's been so long since I've tried to do any writing that I just can't seem to think of things to write about.
Why don't you write about your own experiences? Describe what it's like to walk around here without being able to see. You've got it all over the rest of the fellas. They have to use their imaginations to get stories. You've got a story made to order.
I made a grim resolution as I walked back to the dormitory. I would write. I had to write. The moment I got back to my room, I picked up my braille slate and began writing furiously. It took no time out to think of biting my nails. I just wrote down everything I could think of, then rearranged it several times and brought it to class. One of the men read it aloud for me.
Holmstadt, you ought to write a book.
I didn't take Dr. Schramm's suggestion seriously, but I was pleased to know that he liked what I'd written. I made arrangement to write a series of 5 articles for my thesis. December came. Then January, February, March. Dr. Schramm called me into his office.
I don't see how you can expect to get those articles written in time. Furthermore, what you have written is only part of your story. Why don't you come back next year and write a book?
I don't see how I can. I'm on a leave of absence from my job, and I don't think I can get it renewed. And even if I can do it, I won't be able to afford it. I'm borrowing money to get through this year.
Well, how much money will you need to be able to come back?
Quite a bit.
If I can get a publisher to grant you a contract, they may give you an advance. It may not be enough, but we'll see what can be done.
But I don't think I have confidence enough in myself to write a book.
Well, I have confidence in you. If I didn't, I wouldn't have suggested that you write a book. Well, Onstadt, here's the contract. It calls for completion of the book by next March and provides for an advance to enable you to attend the university next year and write the book. It won't be enough to cover all your expenses, however. Do you know where you might get the rest of the money you need?
The American Federation for the Blind gives scholarships, but I applied for one last summer and was turned down.
Apply again, and try to get another leave of absence from your job for next fall. In the meantime, keep working on that book during the summer.
All summer long, I worked in the library on the book. In July, a letter came from Federation of Blind. My application had been denied again. In August, I was informed that I would not be granted. I had to choose between one of 2 things. Either stay on the job at the library or go back to the university and risk my future on the book. My brother drove into Fairport on his way home from a vacation. I told him the news.
Go back to the university. When you run out of money, don't forget to let me know.
But I still owe you from last year.
Listen, you're going down to the University of Iowa, and I'm going to see that you get the money you need. You're going to write a book. You have listened to the fourth in a series of centennial broadcasts sponsored by the State University of Iowa. Today's script has been an adaptation by Ron Robertson of Carson Olstad's The World at My Fingertips. The World at My Fingertips is published by Bob Merrill, who has permitted us to use the adaptation on this program. Carson Olstad wrote The World at My Fingertips as a graduate student in the writer's workshop at the State University of Iowa. Those taking part in the podcast were John Highlander, Herb Olson, Curtis Paul, Bob Boland, and Jane Blythe. Clay Harshbarger directed. Listen again next week at this same time when the State University will present the next program in this series. The voice of the Midwest, WHO, Des Moines.